Right, right. All right. So things should be warming up on the YouTube end. Welcome to New Dimension Comics Presents the Toddcast. I am yes. John. With me, as always, is Tim, or at least mostly is Tim. And with us this week, very special guest, creator of some of the craziest shit you're ever going to read, Mr. Doug Wagner.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Doug and I met at Comics Pro this year. It was virtual. It was like this cool little virtual bar hangout thing. And we were just kind of hanging out. And I mentioned, hey, we have a podcast. Anyone who wants to come in, here's my email. And he just was like, immediately, boom.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, sweet. No shame. Rock and roll. No.
I was like, okay, fine.
Like, sure. Sure. Yeah. Why not? Right. Sure. All right. Hold on. For some reason, this is not going live on Facebook. We may have to redo this. Or on
YouTube.
YouTube. Why isn't it connecting? All right. Hold on. Okay, now it's going, there we go. Now we're live on YouTube. Oh well, you guys missed the intro, but whatever. We're with Mr. Doug Wagner this week.
Hello.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yes.
All right.
We can redo that enthusiasm. We got it.
Yes.
We're good.
Always.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is a good time. So real quick, just some housekeeping stuff. Some sales coming up at the stores. First Saturday of May, we have a sale that would be normally Free Comic Book Day. But since that's moved to August, we are going to replace it with something else. It will be a celebration of comics and graphic novels. Details forthcoming in the next week. Then don't forget the end of May, Three Rivers Comic Con Light down at the waterfront, May 22nd and 23rd. Outside under some tents, masks required. Do not forget your mask. It'll be a lot of fun. We got some great vendors, a couple local artists up there. You can check that out at our website. And then on June 5th, we have the Million Comic Sale. For those of you who have never been to the Million Comic Sale, it is where we have our Elwood City basement, which houses 500,000 books. The upstairs of Elwood, which holds about another 250,000 books. The old store, which is three storefronts down from Elwood, and then our VFW, which is down the block and across the street and down another block. Over 1,000,000 books, all $1 a piece. Half of it is sorted. It's a good time. If you want to take advantage of the early bird special, which we started doing because of the pandemic, for those of you who really just don't want to have to deal with a whole bunch of other people and want to kind of get first crack at stuff, you can actually buy your early bird ticket at ndcomics.com. You can just click on the thing in the scroller that says Million Comic Sale. There's a link right in there. You pay, it's $300 for your long box. You and only you get to come and shop on one of the days listed. We'll reach out to you to come out for one of those days. We limit it to 5 people on any of those days, the couple weeks going up ahead of it. It's a lot of fun. And if you've never been to the basement for anything, you should. I have guys, some retailers that I know from New Zealand that had come in for visits, and they were like, I'm never going to a Diamond Summit again. I'm just going to come up here and shop, and I'll just get a pallet of comics to send back to New Zealand. And I was like, cool.
Well, and if you want to know how good of a deal that is too, I got 360 books last time. So you're still paying less than $1 a book. So
if you want to do a long box, there is no long box deal at the Million Comics.
Unless the early bird.
The only way to get the long box deal is the early bird for this event. Normally we do $250 for just basement dwelling, but unfortunately, since this involves more stores, we don't do that. So Doug, if you're not doing anything first weekend of June, you want to come out and dig some books, man. I mean, if you need some stuff for your table, like whenever you get ready to go back to doing cons, you let us know, man. We'll try to hook you up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, I have to admit, you know, you telling me, hey, if you give me $300, I'll let you in my dark, deep dungeon. That sounds like one of my stories starts. So you know, like, it's a little spooky on that side of things.
We just wrote the next plot. Boom. Yeah. As long as you're as long as the main characters are John and Tim, I'm okay with it.
Oh yeah.
All right, so this is where we go. We're gonna let you kind of talk. We're gonna ask you about your origin story, as we like to call it. So you can kind of get us like how you got there, like what got you into comics, like where you grew up, what you're doing now, and then anything you want to pitch later is cool. For those who don't know some of your work though, you've done Plastic, Hard Place, Gun Candy, The Ride, Ice, which was really funny because I always thought it was The Rock on the covers, and I'm pretty sure it was designed that way. You did a World of Warcraft book.
I did.
Some Legends of the Dark Knight, and then Witchblade Red Sonja, and then you got some new stuff coming out, both a Kickstarter and a new book from Image, but I'll let you talk about that when you're done with your origin story. So, yours, sir.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, yeah. Okay, so go ahead and tell my whole life story. I grew up in Florida, so that's where I started out. I was an Army brat, so I moved around quite a bit. I was definitely the weird kid in school, as you would imagine, you know, with some of the stuff you probably read of mine, you know, when you listed out, I was definitely the weird kid and the outsider. So I grew up kind of just like making up my own stories and doing a lot of playing, you know, alone in my own world. So that's, I kind of think where writing got started for me is, you know, I just spent most of my days kind of creating stuff for me to do. And actually moved to Alabama in the middle of my high school years. And actually, that's where I met Cully Hamner. And if you know Cully Hamner, Batman,
yeah.
You know, Jeff, you know, if you love Green Lantern, you know, obviously the John Stewart stuff. And we met in high school and we became best friends back in high school.
That's crazy.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Small and freaking
then, oh, yeah. And back then, of course, it was like that weird, like, you know, you never told anybody you liked comics. Mm-hmm. I just happened to see him doodling a character next to me in a desk. And I went, dude, are you into comics? Like, and we kind of like,
we're going to go to the back room and do the secret handshake now.
Oh yeah, totally. And we started hanging out, you know, and he was an artist and, you know, we kind of started making up characters together and we came up with our own superhero team. And about that time, it took me a little bit of time, but about 17 years old, I realized like, you know, I think I'm a writer. And so at that point, you know, much to the chagrin of my parents, you know, they were like, you do not want to go down this path. I decided I wanted to be a comic book writer. Now, you know, it was that specific. Took a couple of years to get there. So the first time I got hired was by Malibu Comics, if you remember them.
Yep.
And Cully Hamner and I actually had pitched them our superhero team that we created in high school, and they were going to publish it. So
and then they folded.
Like, yeah, basically, yeah, that's what happened.
So close.
Yeah, Hank Knaltz, the editor there, had hired me to do a couple of issues of Ultra Force. Mm-hmm. And so Ultra Force was actually my first comic I'd ever written. I was scheduled to write three more, but as you had mentioned, Marvel bought them, promised not to shut them down, took their coloring system, and then shut them down. And so, like, it took me a long time to recover from that one, like, mentally. And then probably about 2004, I got together with some friends and we just decided, you know, hey, we're tired of like waiting to have permission to do what we want to do. We're just going to make comics. And that's where The Ride came from. And that was with like Cully, Brian Stelfreeze, Kevin Gardner, who's the president of 12 Gauge, Jason Pearson, George's Genty, and Dexter Vines. We all kind of got together and said, hey, we want to do something different.
That's awesome.
And so that was kind of like my way back in. And since then, it's mostly been just me doing creator-owned stuff. And like you said, the occasional things over at DC Custom with Lena. Luckily, I got to do some Batman stuff and some Justice League stuff over there for them. And that's where the World of Warcraft stuff happened too. So definitely not the typical path, but from what I understand, you know, for writing and especially in comics, there is no typical path. Like, you know, right. I think people can give you a direction. It never works out that way.
That's cool. While you continue your story, I'm just going to show a couple of the books that you've worked on over the years. So.
Oh yeah. And that one was with Brian Stelfreeze, Gun Candy. That was Lacey who actually came out of The Ride. She was just kind of like this crazy assassin that we came up with. She's only on like two or three pages, but people wouldn't leave us alone about her. So Brian and I were like, okay, well, we'll do an origin story for her. So we've created this crazy 18-year-old assassin origin story and how, you know, she kind of was raised by the mob. And, you know, of course, the mob lied to her about her entire life. So she kind of turns on them.
Right.
Crazy over the top action. We just wanted to do something that was like, you know, we wanted plot, obviously, but at the same time, we wanted it to be a lot of fun with the action and how crazy we went with it.
Cool.
It's like Hit Girl before Hit Girl.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I like Stelfreeze a lot, like in everything Brian does. So.
Oh, yeah, Brian. And he's a great guy, too. But yeah, Brian's an amazing artist.
Yep, it's World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft, which I didn't think I was going to get, to be honest with you. Like, DC called me, and I was actually in a pool of, I think, 20 writers.
Yeah.
That Blizzard asked for us to all write the first issue of this series.
Jeez.
And they were going to pick their favorite. Well, at that time, I wasn't playing World of Warcraft. So I was like, I don't have a chance. Like, there's no way. And so I won't lie, I kind of, like, dismissed it, and I didn't do it. And the editor called me back, and he goes, Where's the script? And I go, dude, you know they're not going to pick me. I don't know anything about World of Warcraft. He goes, you got 2 days. Turn in something. So I turned in something, and
that's what it was.
Yeah, somehow they called me back, and they're like, you're the one. And I was like, me? Like, seriously? So there was a lot of cramming and playing a lot of World of Warcraft for about 3 weeks of, like, 10-hour days of me playing Warcraft trying to figure out how everything worked.
Isn't that how you're supposed to play Warcraft? 10-hour
days? Yes, exactly. But I mean, I have to say, like, everybody at Blizzard and the DC guys, everybody there was fantastic to work with. They really helped me.
Awesome.
This one's interesting, you know, because now ice isn't, seeing the best of light. So we wrote that before, obviously, all the, you know, the stuff that happened over the past 5 years.
Right.
And, the reason why it looks like The Rock is because The Rock actually was involved in the beginning. We were actually talking to him about possibly being in a movie, you know, so we were working on the movie with Ice starring The Rock, and then he got the offer for Fast and Furious. And he's like, you know, I think I have a better chance of doing a Fast and Furious franchise and turning that into something, which obviously he was correct than starting from scratch with something like this, you know. And if you think about it in hindsight, like, it's probably a good thing he didn't do something called Ice. You know, of how bad the press got for that organization. You know, and again, that's a Brian Stelfreeze cover. Jose Holder did the first miniseries, and then Daniel Hilliard, who's the guy that worked on me with Plastic, he did this next two miniseries.
Nice. All right, let's see what else we got. Ah,
oh, yes. Arizona. And this is, there's always an interesting story behind me. This one started out with me and Ron Mars. Ron Mars called me, and we were going to co-write this together.
Nice.
And the interesting thing is, like, Dynamite and Top Cow kind of wanted to have a crossover, but really didn't want the characters to interact. And so
it doesn't make sense.
I know, trying to write a crossover, you know, where you're like, hey, we don't want the two characters to be in the same time. You're like, okay. So, I mean, we obviously came up with something, and unfortunately, you know, at that time, as money and the schedules work out, Ron couldn't finish it off with me, but he definitely helped me get it started. And that was a tough one. I won't lie. That was a tough write, just because, you know, they're like, hey, we need you to write a crossover with two characters that don't actually cross over.
Yeah.
Right. I'm a big fan of Witchblade. That's why I was, like, very excited to see this.
I was looking at that cover, and I was like, I think that's the most clothing I've ever seen on Witchblade.
On Sarah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It also looks like she has, like, a tail, which is weird. But
yeah, no, now I'm looking at that. I'm like, yeah, that is kind of weird.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Oh, here's Plastic, I just reread today in its entirety. And holy crap, is it crazy?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. This one, you know, I just had this idea one day about a serial killer that was in love with a blow-up doll. And that's where it kind of all came from. And I pitched it to Daniel Hilliard one day, and he said, I love it. I want that to be our next book. And there was a little fighting, you know, with some of the publishings who have gone on of, like, who wanted it, who didn't want it. Like, people telling us to do this book would end our careers. It was kind of like a weird thing, but I was like, no, this is the book we're doing it. We're doing it exactly the way we want to do it.
And I felt that you did this at just the right time in the Image world where it was right where Image really started to come out with some really great creator owned kind of edgier stuff, and this was kind of right at the right time. Because this was, when was this?
Is it 2016?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, because this would have been like around the same time as like Saga and like Sex Criminals and Bitch Planet and all the like Milk Fed guys who were doing all these super crazy, like kind of edgy stuff. And like we had, I think the next volume of Finale Fatale came out around then too. So like there was a lot of good stuff that had come out around then, which was great. So, all right. Hard Place.
Oh yeah. The Hard Place. That was Nick Rommel and myself came up with it. We kind of wanted to do this kind of like, you know, I wanted to create this story where you had this driver that was getting out of, you know, a professional driver kind of deal that was getting out of prison after a couple of years. We kind of wanted to lead a clean life, but the world wouldn't let him. And when I say the world, I mean, by the middle of this book, everybody's after him. The police are after him. They want him dead. The Russian mafia is after him. They want him to dead. The two guys that forced him to drive for him, they're going to kill him as soon as they get a chance. So like everything he's surrounded by, everybody wants to kill him. Wow. And so, you know, it's just like this fun, like, how can we do this and have a car chase throughout five issues of a book and make it make sense?
That's awesome.
You know, so yeah, we had a ton of fun with this one. And of course, another Brian Stelfreeze cover, so it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, he does a lot of your covers, and I'm not gonna lie, that's not a bad thing.
No, I love it.
This one is definitely not Brian, though.
No, that's definitely not Brian. No. This was a ton of fun too. I mean, this is I think it's my third miniseries with The Ride that I've gotten a chance to do. And again, Daniel Hilliard's doing the main one in this one, but we decided to do a series of backups in this one so we can include people that have been doing the book with us for 15 years. And obviously this is an Adam Hughes cover and this is Sparkles. he does the backup story for her origin in the back. And the way the story played out, we have the police officer from the very first issue. She's just getting out of prison from the ramifications of what happened in that first mini series. And so she's working in an eclectic dance club. This happens to be one of the dancers, and that's where all the backup stories came from, is we wanted to do these backup stories kind of showing the origin of all these different, you know, eccentric strippers, basically.
Right.
And so, you know, Sparkles is one of them. She dances in a unicorn onesie. She never shows her face, and we explain why, you know, like how that all came to be. And so that's why, you know, Adam doing the cover, and of course, you know, it's Adam Hughes, so he nailed it out of the park.
And then this is the book that you're that's coming out, right?
Yeah, June 23rd. This is coming out from Image. This is kind of a sequel, at least in the same universe as Plastic.
When I read the description, like the solicitation, I was like, "Is this Plastic Part 2?"
Like, no. Daniel and I have this crazy idea of doing what we call a material trilogy, and so it all started after we got done with Plastic, and obviously then we're doing Vinyl. And we're already working on the third one. And so Vinyl's, you know, the latest in that universe kind of thing. We want to do these different serial killer kind of takes. And with this one, it's the main character here you see is Walter. And he's being investigated by the FBI. They're trying to get him to make a mistake so that, you know, they can lock him up forever. Well, the main FBI guy that's investigating him, Walter thinks is his best friend because they meet every month. You know, he doesn't care what the motivations behind it are. Well, this crazy all-female sunflower cult decides to kidnap this FBI agent. So Walter gets involved because he's like, no, I'm going to get my friend back. And so Walter calls a couple of his serial killer friends to go help him. And so it's like this crazy, they go into this underground bunker with a sunflower cult, and there's monsters and mayhem and blood and, you know, all the, if you love the violence in Plastic, that's what we're kind of recreating here too. It's just like this insane fun horror film miniseries. Yeah, we're having a ton of fun with it.
And you said June 23rd on Third.
That is correct. Yeah.
So come down, guys, to the shop, go on Comic Hub.
Actually, I will show you how easy it is. You ready for this?
Super easy.
You ready for this, guys? This is how easy it is. As soon as I find where my... I got to maximize it first.
Too soon.
Hold on. It's not that easy.
It's like being at the red light. And you're like, 3, 2, 1, go. And then it doesn't turn green. And then you do it again because nobody's in the car with you.
Oh, here we go. All right. So I literally... This is my customer hub. I searched for the words vinyl and then number one. And I made sure I had my variant stuff open. And I'm just going to go like this and click the little put it in my cart thing. And I'm going to click the other one for the variant cover. And then I'm going to go over here to my cart. And I'm going to go to my pre-order cart. and I'm gonna submit place my that. Order and boom, done. Pittsburgh Mills is getting my money.
That's right.
So
that easy, guys. Literally that easy. Just because, yeah, I think a lot of people think because if the book doesn't show up in like the next week or the FOC that it's not on there, but you can go in and search. So if you know that there's a book coming out, you can go in there and search and it's probably in there. So
cool. Hold on a second. There was something.
I feel like I need to grab mine and do mine now.
Yeah, so do it. Hop on there. I'm doing it right now. Get her done.
No, please don't. I will never do a podcast again if you say get her done. I don't think you know how much I dislike that man.
I'm sorry. I will no longer do that.
It's snakes and then Larry the Cable Guy. Those are like the two things that I hate the most.
Those are your two fears.
Yes. It's weird, but yes.
Oh my.
That comic cup stuff, though, I hadn't seen it in action before. That is pretty sweet and simple. I love the fact that, you know, that's the way it always should be, right? Like, if you're going to sell stuff online, make it as easy as possible for everybody so there's no, like,
games
to jump through. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's super easy.
I tend to like using the website a little bit. The app's really good, too, because they did a redesign on the app. But I tend to like using the website a little bit more than the app. Yeah.
I mean, I've used the website to try to find stuff that we don't have, or I'll be like, like when I was like, which book has Plastic's graphic novel so that I don't have to dig out all my singles somewhere. I just hopped on comichub.com, punched it in, and I was like, oh, luckily three of our stores showed up. So good deal. So I picked it up. I think I got it in our Cranberry store. So, but everybody should have them back in stock soon. So if you want to talk a little bit more about vinyl, or you want to talk about your Kickstarter book,
vinyl, obviously the first issue doesn't even come out yet, so I mean, I kind of gave the quick pitch on that one. I mean, if you know, it's the interesting thing is with the material trilogy that we're working on, we're trying to come up with like three different ways of doing it. So the first Plastic you saw was a lot more gritty,
and
in this one we're trying to do what we're calling beautiful horror. So you saw there's butterflies and sunflowers and, you know, all these pretty things. And we're kind of playing with the theme of like, some things can be pretty, but they're monsters on the inside. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what we're playing with the whole thing. Like the main character is kind of based off of Charlize, or the main villain is based off of Charlize Theron.
Oh, nice.
And so it's like, you know, the most beautiful woman in the world, and she might be the most evil in the whole book. You know, like, you know, how does that look like, you know? So like we're having fun with playing with like, you know, perceptions and that kind of fun stuff. And obviously, you know, vinyl, we decided to play a little bit too with the fact that maybe it's not vinyl like you would wear, it's vinyl like in records, you know, if you can pick some of that up off the cover. So there's like a strong music theme throughout the whole thing as well.
That's awesome.
Oh, cool.
I'm in. So on the third one, are you going to make it like a female serial killer who's obsessed with like diamonds?
I'm not going to give away that one. It's going to be strange and odd, and it's not going to be the natural progression of, because, you know, I mean, with books like that, we could easily do, you know, plastic, vinyl, leather, right?
Yeah.
Nah, that's too easy and not strange enough for us. So the next one's going to be a ton of fun.
Well, if it's going to be strange, I'm in.
Oh, yeah.
So you also have a book being Kickstarted right now called Yumi. Right.
Yes.
With my buddy Hoyt. You can check out that at their website too. I put $30 and bought mine today. My soft cover. I went with I think cover B or C, I think. Anyway, and I got all the cool download stuff. So thank you for that. I'll be looking forward to that. And I think that's also in June. But you can check that out on Kickstarter as well.
And I'll get the link and we can post that in the comments and stuff below. Right. If anybody wants to use that, I think, afterwards we can get that put up. So, and then I'll get it posted on our page too. Yeah.
Cool. I happened to find that cause I was like, oh, I'm going to see what he's doing on Twitter lately. And then I'm like, holy crap. Like, this is awesome. You and I were talking earlier, like, Hoyt's a dude that like no one really knows yet. But like 5 or 6 years ago, he was doing a one shot or a mini series that he was going to do with Action Lab. And it was this awesome, super gritty, like, cloak and daggery detective-y story thing. It was so cool. And, then like, I never saw him again cause he's out in California. But he was like, I hung out with him all weekend cause I help out their booth. And I think his art is fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to what you guys are going to put together with that. I was like, I don't even need to see the interiors or read the descriptions. I'm just going to buy this book. So
and this one's, you know, and I get accused of not following a particular genre, and this one's definitely out of what everything we've already talked about is totally different. So this one's, he refers to it as a Hello Kitty hand grenade. It's like this cute, sassy, deadly, like crazy story.
It's like Sucker Punch with like a real plot.
Well, you know, yeah, I hope so. I mean, dude, we just went, you know, he came to me and he's like, hey, I want to do a flip on the James Bond motif. And like, what if one of the exes like fell in love with him and wouldn't let it go? And so we've got this Yumi character who's in love with a, you know, British intelligence top agent.
Oh, nice.
And he goes missing. And so she's like, well, I will burn down the world to get him back. And she's 10 times the spy and hacker that he will ever be. And so we get caught in this like crazy, like she's going from X to X trying to find Richard. Mm-hmm. Along the way, she finds a sentient Lamborghini that she reprograms that has now has the voice of Cardi B. And then, like, you know, so, like, it's just like all this pop culture, like laser beams and katanas, all that kind of stuff in it. You know, we just had a ton of fun with it. So I think, you know, I think you'll enjoy it. I think it's a ton of fun. And Hoyt, of course, delivers in spades.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. I'm super excited. Oh, man. All right. Now we're going to divert and talk about some new release books. Feel free to chime in about any of these. It looks like one of our guys watching right now on YouTube did order his vinyl.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ron. Ordered it now. So, all right. I'm going to go first because my book is sitting on the – it's just already up. So,
okay.
My first book is already up.
Makes it easy.
So, Green Lantern, number one from Infinite Frontier. This book was weird because I'm usually not into Jon Stewart, but they really wrote him well this time. He wasn't like super overbearing, which he can sometimes be. I really love the art in this book. They have these cool Kryptonian robes. Basically, it's two stories. One is they're trying to train Teen Lantern and figure out if her gauntlet actually is like Krona's lantern or Krona's gauntlet, which it is not, or it might be from a different dimension, maybe.
Yeah, because she has hacked in, right? It's a machine that she uses that hacks into, or supposedly hacks into, the Green Lantern.
It doesn't actually work off the lantern battery, which is the part that they were explaining, which was weird. And then the other part is that Oa is trying to join the new United Planets that they're putting together, that the Kryptonians have put together. And there's some, like, at one point just all hell breaks loose and you see like the Red Lantern show up. There's people from Gem World. Like, it was just really cool to see Dexter and Bleez in another book because I haven't seen them in so long. And then like all of the new Korriger, Sinestro's planet are there, and they're in these really cool outfits that I thought look neat compared to
that is kind of cool,
you know, the normal stuff. It was very, very good for the first issue. I'm more of a Hal guy, so I'll probably at least give it one or two more issues, because like it really is kind of the new core book because everybody's in it. Hal shows up a little bit. Guy shows up. Baz is there. Jessica Cruz is off on a different thing. Kyle's off on a different thing. So it really set it up well. Somebody gets assassinated in it. I'm not going to ruin it, but it's really kind of the crux of it all.
I was going to say, I thought that I had read that the death or the murder was going to be kind of like the big thing for the first arc.
Yeah, so it really makes it space policey to me, which you know, yeah, is kind of the deal.
That's because it worked for Far Sector. I mean, that's right. What Far Sector was, and I think there's one more issue left, and that book's fantastic.
Yeah, so. It's not bad. I haven't really read Far Sector that much, but that there's a Howl with Her book coming soon, which I'm excited to check out. So
nice.
All right, Tim, what's your first book?
Let's do Avengers first.
Okay.
Because then the other two are Venom ones, King and Black and Venom. So, so this is the finale. And it's weird because it didn't really feel like a finale.
The end of the Phoenix finale, you mean, right?
Yeah, the end of Phoenix finale. There's one more issue of Avengers before the Heroes Reborn starts. It's Avengers 45, which I think is a King and Black tie-in, which is weird because it'll be out like a month after King and Black ended. But so if you don't know the setup of this, it was the Phoenix Force is looking for somebody to take over as the new Phoenix, and it pulls all these people in side of it and gives them the Phoenix power, and it's making them kind of do like a battle royale. And where we pick up is Captain America is fighting with T'Challa, and I think it was Red Widow and Shauna. It was a nice battle, but it moves kind of quick because it's just these battles back and forth. If you hate Namor, you will love this issue because he gets his ass beat. and I loved it for that. they do a good job of making you hate him. No matter how good he is, you always just seem to hate him. But without giving away too much, there's somebody that's chosen. And it is the last person you would ever expect. And if you want to know, you're going to have to go pick it up because I don't want to give any spoilers if somebody hasn't read it. And then there's a little bit of a mystery with the stuff with Thor, because you found out in the previous issue that the Phoenix, the original Phoenix entity, is actually his mother. And they kind of leave it open-ended. She's like, I have to go and I'll tell you more. So there's some mystery there. I'm hoping that Jason Aaron will be the one to write it and wrap that up. But definitely pick it up so you can see who this new Phoenix is, because I'm interested to see how that this new Phoenix is going to operate. I don't know if this Phoenix is going to be the one that sets this world on fire and creates this new universe with the Heroes Reborn. So we'll have to wait and see, but it was a lot of fun. It was a really cool beat 'em up arc with Phoenix style. So
awesome.
I couldn't read all the way down. Who did the interiors on that book?
Javier Garin, I believe. His name. He's one of their new like young guns or Stormbreakers, I think they're calling them now. But his artwork is fantastic, and the colors, I didn't see who was doing the colors, but they compliment his work really well. It was really good artwork. So
nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. My next book is Geiger from Image Comics, Mr. Jeff Johns and Mr. Gary Frank and Mr. Brad Anderson. So it's basically like, the three Jokers crew. This book is weird and I like it. Cause it's kind of like 1950s-y, where it's like, somebody's like, crazy dude's got a bunker, a missile's coming for America, so the family runs for the bunker, and then the neighbors shoot him in the leg when he goes to try to get the dog, and the family seals themselves in. The neighbors are just like, crap, and it looks like they kill him, but then it looks like everything explodes, and then it's shoots 20 years in the future, and there's people walking around in hazmat suits trying to figure out if anything is there and can be done. And they come across the bunker, and there's this other like super looking dude, like very strong. He's got like a cloak, big muscles. And he kind of tells them to get the hell out. And then all kinds of awesome radioactiveness happens. There's this awesome thing where he kind of looks was it glow scare or scare glow from He-Man? not like the not actually Skeletor, but the other one. It's really good. And then they go to this other place where I guess what left of humanity has kind of become like a kingdom with a fiefdom, and the prince is kind of an a-hole, and you find out that he's actually in Vegas. So, and that's where it kind of ends up. And you're going to find out what's going on in Vegas for the next one. And it's, I dug the story. I like Jeff Johns. I like Gary Frank. I thought this book.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I thought this book really did well for it. And
I was sad. I was sad that Jeff Johns and, you know, that they left DC, but, you know, they wanted to do some other stuff. Because to me, Jeff Johns is DC. I don't know if anybody understands DC better than Jeff Johns. That's just my opinion. I know there's a lot of people that aren't a big fan of him, but I think he just gets. He gets the DC that I like. So, but I'm really excited to read this because he's writing it. And Gary Frank, I mean, I'd read the phone book if he drew it. So,
I want Gary Frank to do the Bible. Like, let's do a new version of the Bible done by Gary Frank. Put it right by the Bud Root version. It'll be fine. Like, so, all right. What's your next one, Tim?
We'll go Venom because it comes before King in Black 5.
All right. That's what I was hoping you were
going
to say.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
This the art is Ivan Coelho, I think is how you say his name. But this is very much a redemption kind of arc that sets up King in Black number 5 because, you know, coming into this, Eddie is dead. And we saw in the fourth issue of King in Black that Silver Surfer had showed up with some light to battle the darkness. And we find out that it was Captain Universe. And we were all our minds were blown except for John's because he wasn't a big fan of it. But it's a really cool arc because this is Eddie coming back to life. The force is bringing him back. Reed Richards actually kind of recognizes this Captain Universe force and calls it the Enigma Force, I believe he says. And we get to see some really cool stuff. You get to see a Flash Thompson anti-venom dragon, which is awesome. You get to see Eddie with the symbiotes start absorbing a bunch of other symbiotes, and then he kind of goes monster symbiote like we saw in that Venom Inc. Alpha issue from like 2019 or 17, something like that. So this is basically it's a little long winded, but it's him coming back and it's setting everything up for. I'll give you a cool shot. This is him with the Enigma Force there, wow, Captain Universe. Cool. Yeah, so this is, you know, him coming back to life, and then. I kind of want to spoil it for everybody. And I
already saw that page. I am so pumped for that.
Yeah. So I'm going to do it.
Just so you
know. I'm not going to spoil King in Black 5, but I'm going to spoil this part because I was super excited. It ends with this voice talking about coming back, and we get this awesome image of Flash Thompson's hand coming up out of the grave and Agent Venom, you know, excited that, you know, for that to be back. Who knows what he's going to be and in what role that he'll be back, but just it doesn't feel like a Spider-Man, you know, book or spinoff book without having Flash Thompson around. So I'm glad that he's going to be coming back. So that was a really fun book. It's very much a setup book for King in Black 5, but still really good. So
that's awesome. Yeah, I was really, when I saw that, I was just like, he's finally completing all of the Venoms put together. I enjoy this part because I was really sad that he wasn't touching Agent Venom in that arc, but that was my favorite Venom run ever. So, all right. My last book is Tankers number 1 from Bad Idea.
That is gorgeous.
Oh my God. Yeah. Juan Jose Reap. I don't know how you say that. RYP. He did a lot of, Ryan and I at the Mills were talking about this, and he had done a lot of work for Avatar Press. but the art in this book is just so good. The story is kind of dumb, but fun.
Fun, dumb.
Fun. Oh my God. It's the most dumb, fun book I've seen in a while. So basically the plot is these oil barons in Texas want to create more oil for them to sell by going back in time and taking the comet that killed the dinosaurs and putting it off course so that it doesn't kill the dinosaurs. And then 50,000 years later, when it comes around again, it actually will hit the Earth and create end times, and then you'll have even more oil. And obviously no one thinks about, you know, how time travel works. So they go back, they do their thing. They have these awesome giant mech suits that they're just beating the hell and shooting dinosaurs, and it's just so crazy. Like
it kind of looked like the mech suits from the third Matrix movie.
Yeah. I would totally be 100% down with that. Here's like an awesome picture, maybe. Oh, wait, let me get it. There we go. Of like the dinosaurs just getting annihilated. And it's just like, what?
I'm excited that it's colored because all the previews showed it in black and white. And yeah, I thought it looked gorgeous like, in black and white. But
look at that
in color.
Like a freaking T-Rex nice. Just like trying to eat that. And the guy's alive inside the mouth. And he's like, buzz saws, activate buzz saws. And then like these giant saws come out and cut the dinosaur's head in part. It's crazy. And then they go back to their time and they screwed up and they end up and they're like, this is Mexico. Why are we in Mexico? And the one professor's like, oh, since the world didn't get hit by the meteor, it didn't set the Earth off axis. So now we're going to be at this place. And
thanks, Texas.
Dang it. So it is by far the most dumb fun book out there right now. It is just stupid fun. Like if you're the kind of guy that likes like Godzilla versus Kong for the dumb stompy fights, this is the book you need to read. It is stupid, just dumb fun. And I can't wait to read the rest of it. I've liked, this is the second Bad Idea book I've liked. I also read ENIAC 2. It was excellent. So they are two for two for me, man. Like they're hitting it out of the park. I really, really enjoy what's going on with them. So, all right. So your last book, King in Black.
This is it. King in Black.
The finale, right?
Yeah. This is the one that he's been building up to since he took over and finally gave Venom, you know, Agent Venom is, you know, I kind of hold different. Venom himself, Eddie Brock, I don't feel like he's ever really gotten a really good arc. This was fantastic. It opens up with Silver Surfer. I think one of the coolest things out of Silver Surfer Black in the Donny Cates run was him creating this idea that the Silver Surfer's board is not just his board. It's whatever he wants it to be. So this board, you know, morphs into a sword and he's going to fight Null with this. Null's still kind of being like really cocky. But for the first time we see him scared because what happens is, you know, all these superheroes are like, okay, you know, we're going to fight you. And he's like, I don't really care. And then you get like a shot like this, you know, you get this Captain Universe powered. And from that point on, Null just shits his pants. he's kind of like, you know, I beat you once before, but there's something different about you. And we get this scene where Thor has Mjolnir and Venom's like, I'll take that. And Thor's like, whoa, how can he do that? And then Silver Surfer's got his sword and Venom's like, I'll take that. And he's like, how can he do that? And he whirls them together and makes this amazing axe, which is like just awesome. And it kind of comes full circle because when the story opened up, it opened up in the first issue with Null holding Eddie Brock on a skyscraper and then dropping him down below. He does the same thing to Null. He strips him of the symbiote power. He's cutting up dragons. You're getting to see some the green goo fly out of the dragons, which I found out that that green that the Venom always secretes is like their poop.
So when they eat the homeless guy, he turns into green slime. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and then it comes out of their mouth. So like they don't like.
So you gotta puke it out.
Yeah, it's like Kim Jong Un. Like he doesn't have a butthole, so like it's coming out that way.
It's gotta come out.
Oh my god.
Pee or poop. it's just Donny Cates finally gives us what we've wanted. We saw this villain, and he's badass, and we're getting to see Eddie Brock at his best. And Eddie Brock is now, I believe, the most powerful being in the Marvel universe, is what they're talking about. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy to think. I mean, he's saved his son. He's flying. There's so much action in here, and so much satisfaction if you've been reading it since Venom 1, to see this all wrapped up. But also it's kind of sad because I'm like, oh, this is they made Venom into something that besides Agent Venom that nobody's really done before. And it has some heart and some story and some character to it. So it was a fantastic issue. I'm not going to give away anything about the ending. The artwork is fantastic. It's Ryan Stegman. He's at his best on this Venom stuff, the King in Black. So the whole title of King in Black is not what you think it is. So check it out. It's a really good read. And I'm excited to see where they take this character next. So
now that if Donny Cates is done writing Venom, what are you going to read now, Tim?
I mean,
whatever Donny Cates writes.
Yeah. So let me see.
Thor. I'm going to read Thor.
Thor crossover. I know he's working on. He's been teasing these little images of him and Stegman at like the Marvel, getaway. We're working on a secret project. A lot of people thought it was going to be Moon Knight, but they just announced Moon Knight with a different. Right. Creative team, so it's not going to be Moon Knight. Honestly, whatever he writes, like this guy's, whatever he writes is just gold right now. He gets what people want in comics, or at least in superhero comics.
I'll be honest, with as hot as he is and all the stuff they talked about where this is going to be the year of Fantastic Four, I would not be surprised if they were on Fantastic Four.
Yeah, because I don't think I don't think the slot run has been very well received. I've enjoyed it, but I don't think a lot of people have enjoyed him on the Fantastic Four like they thought.
Yeah, so, I thought it was definitely good through like the wedding, and then a little after that is when I fell off. But I thought it was good that Ben finally got to marry Alicia. Like,
yeah,
some good stuff that came through that.
So. I mean, there's some good stuff coming up, like the Doom wedding. He's getting married. We don't know who yet. So like there's some really cool stuff come. I've enjoyed that run and the artwork's been fantastic on that run as well. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't think it's been as well. It's also Fantastic Four. And I think like people have it in their head. They just keep thinking this Fox Fantastic Four because the movies have opened people up to comics. So they see Fantastic Four and they're like, yeah, those movies kind of sucked. I don't want to read this book, but it's not the same thing. So.
And I think bringing Don, if Donnie were to take that over, what's great about Donnie is I think sometimes Dan Slott can get stuck a little bit into like the what makes Marvel characters what they are and what they've always been. Mm-hmm. Donnie's going to come in, he's going to shake it all up. Yeah. So Donnie will come in and be like, okay, I'm going to blow this up and create something new. And, that's Donnie's great at that. So I can see them definitely going that way, saying, hey, if Slott's run's not selling the way we hope, let's give Donnie a crack at it and see what he'll do with it.
Yeah, I think that the thing that Donnie does well, I think that not just shaking it up, but the way he shakes it up is like he finds those things from the past that people really like about a character. and then he incorporates it into it. So if he does the Fantastic Four stuff, all I think of is, oh man, are we going to get a mid-rift boob window Invisible Woman again? Please no. I think he would be really good on Fantastic Four. I've never seen him on a team book. He did Avengers briefly. So outside of that, though, I don't think I've ever seen him on a team book. I think it would be cool to see him on a team book.
Crossover's kind of teamy, but it's also still early in its run, so it's hard to say. It's only on the fifth issue, you know. So
cool. All right. All right, Doug. I have some randomly fun questions for you now.
Oh, let's do it.
Tim, do you have any randomly fun questions, or do you want me to just do one and then you can?
Go ahead. You get started, and then I'll think of one. All right.
In reviewing some of your catalog, I then came up with the question of many of your stories involve serial killers and or ex-cons. Are you in love with psychopaths, or is there something we should know?
Remember, I told you I was a weird kid, right? So, like, let's dive down that rabbit hole just a little bit. Like, you know, when you're the weird kid, and you guys can't see me in person, but, you know, I'm not the tallest person in the world, you get bullied a lot. It creates an alternate personality that is a little bit of a psychopath. So
yeah,
I channel that. You know,
at least your psychopath is a character in a book, and you're not actually acting on it.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. Like you're not like full on Kaczynskiing and unibombering. Like
right. Yes.
Yeah. Right.
this is my way of channeling without having to go to therapy. But I've always liked. There's something about, you know, like the ex-con, you know, even like take Eddie Brock, you know, going to with the Venom stuff. I like the redeemable, like the characters that have, you know, they haven't lived the perfect life.
Yeah.
And, you know, what was fun with me with Plastic is that Edwin is just like very non-assuming kind of guy. And I always thought like, man, what if that non-assuming guy that somebody picks on is the most dangerous person on this planet? Like in a serial killer kind of way, not in like a, you know, Navy SEAL kind of way, but a serial killer kind of like, what would that look like?
Right.
You know, like he's not going to jump up and get in a fight with you. He's going to wait till you go home and go to bed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's going to show up in your house. You know?
And then here comes the bag.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
You know,
like,
I just love that kind of stuff. You know, I love the strangeness of it and having fun with these characters that you might perceive, you know, in a normal world, the rest of the world is going to perceive as evil, right? But maybe there's some good to be done by them.
Yeah, and that's kind of the impression I got out of some of your books, and it was just very interesting because like I'm rereading Solicits because I'm like I haven't read that in a while. I'm like, oh yeah, and I'm just like, man, he really loves people who have killed people or have been to prison. Like it's like, should we know something? You're not telling me something. Should I hide? Should I not? Like let you know where I actually live. So.
I'm pretty harmless except when I'm writing. So
well, it's a long trek from Utah. So.
Well, here's my question is a selfish question because they started a new Law and Order TV show. And I'm interested to know Elliot Stabler's back. And I don't know if you know Law and Order.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Okay. Liv or Elliot, who would you pick? If you wanted a partner, if you were going to be a partner in, a crime story, who would you want?
Ooh, that's a good question, Tim.
Dude, that's brutal. I mean, Elliot's such a classic character. I mean, I think I'd lean towards him because he's so experienced.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you know, having that older character that might be able to, like his perspectives on stuff are so odd and a little bit off. And, you know, obviously I was, as from John's question, I like that. So, you know, I think I'd lean, barely, but I'd lean towards Elliot.
Yeah. Yeah. He likes to jump off the handle, like, and just kind of like, do his own thing and then, you know, pay for it later. That's the guy that I would pick, because then maybe I could stay under the radar while he's in the spot.
Same. I'm right there with you guys. So
I've just been debating this all week, because I'm like, I waited for him to come back. I thought they were going to put him back on the show, and they're like, nah, I'm going to do my own show now. So I was kind of surprised by that.
I thought it was cool that they gave him a whole new show. I mean, didn't he leave when he just started doing Happy, right?
Yeah. He left when he was doing Happy.
Which was excellent, by the way, if you guys haven't watched it.
Yeah. I think it was something like he was kicked off the Force. He did something. But then this opens up with, I think the first part was on SVU. Something, his wife dies in the first episode.
Wow. And
so they killed her off. A lot of people were upset about that, that killing off his wife to give him purpose and meaning. And it's like, I mean, if she didn't want to act in the show anymore, you know?
Right.
Because she hadn't been around. I mean, how long's he been off the show? 6-7 years?
Yeah.
Maybe more. So, yeah.
At least 5.
That was on top of my head, so.
No, that was a good one. That was good. Since you wrote it, who wins in a fight, Witchblade or Red Sonja?
Ooh.
if it makes it more fair, they're both naked. They don't have any armor, no nothing, because I feel that the Witchblade itself would give the advantage. But if it was just hand-to-hand combat, no armor, no weapons, no nothing.
See, it makes it easy, because Red Sonja is just, I mean, she's the female version of Conan the Barbarian. And that's, even if you gave Sarah the Witchblade, Red Sonja is still a threat, because she's like Conan. Like, she's going to find a way to beat evil, you know, or magic in her, you know, in what would be her perspective of that.
Right.
You know, a special sword, something, Red Sonja's going to find it. So, but, you know, if they're naked with no weapons, it's definitely, to me, like, there's no contest. Red Sonja is just a force of nature.
Yeah. So I agree with that.
I think I would lean toward that as well. I think if they had weapons, though, I think the Witchblade would squeak it out. Squeak it out. So
it's going to be tough to take down the Witchblade. There's no doubt about that.
Right. All right, Tim, you got another one? I have one more if you don't.
No, I try to keep – I like to keep my questions more like away from, so people can know you, you know. Is there anything you're watching right now that you're really into, that's kind of like just like really grabbed you, that you're like, oh man, I can't wait for this next episode?
I mean, I'm dying. You know, I know you guys have been talking about the Winter Soldier and Falcon.
We're gonna talk about that in a few minutes, but yeah,
I haven't started watching it yet because I want to kind of binge it all at once. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm a binger.
Dude. So, oh, dude.
I'm trying to think of anything, to be honest with you, not really. I mean, you know, there's been so little coming out lately that, it's tough. I've been rewatching stuff. So I've been watching comedies like Schitt's Creek and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Rewatching those.
I'm waiting for this new Brooklyn Nine-Nine season. I can't wait. I think, is this the last season coming up? I think. Yeah, I mean, they made it 7 or 8 seasons, so good for them, you know, because it was at this network and then canceled and then at this one. So it's a really good comedy.
I think, and what was interesting is my wife pointed out, they're really close to being on episode or season 9, episode 9. How you don't end it there.
Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine just call last episode 9-9?
Yeah.
That's, to be honest with you, I haven't been, but I've been holding off on the Winter Soldier and stuff until
so good.
And killing it, you know, because I always find like that week to week stuff kills me.
Yeah.
You know, and then I'll get stuck on one episode and I'm thinking about it all week and I can't get any work done.
Netflix kind of ruined that, huh? They're like, hey, this is how you're going to watch TV now. And then everybody's trying to pull back and like, oh, we want people to be subscribing and paying every month.
not so just
let's do weekly.
Binge it all, cancel for 3 months, binge it all. Yeah. I actually got a year's worth of Apple TV Plus with my iPad. Yeah. And I binged through the entire 2 seasons of both The Servant and Dickinson last week. And both of those shows were excellent.
Nice.
Servant's the M. Night Shyamalan one, but yeah. Dickinson was so good. It's funny, it's entertaining, it's they really like kind of, my wife hates period pieces, but because they don't speak period and there's like modern music and stuff in it, like she really enjoyed it and it was really funny. I was not expecting it to be that funny.
You should check out, since you have that, because I have it too, For All Mankind.
Okay.
It's fantastic. It's basically Russia wins the space race, and then it's all this alternate history now. So like now they have to, we're gonna send somebody to space. Well, how do we outdo them? Okay, well we're gonna send women to space, and then we do that first. And it's all this back and forth, and then they're on the moon, and they're in my base, and I'm in there. It's awesome. So I would definitely check it out. It's a fun show.
I'm gonna have to check.
And the guy that plays Rick Flagg is in it.
From
Suicide Squad. Yeah, he's like one of the main guys. So
nice.
Yeah.
I liked things that are alternate history. Like I really liked Man in the High Castle on Amazon. That was excellent. Mm-hmm. Season one was a little hard to get through, but after that it hit a good stride. All right, one last question, and then we'll talk about Invincible and Winter Soldier, and then we'll wrap things up. So what is the book that you've always dreamed you wanted to work on? And why?
This is always an easy one for me. X-Men. Grew up an Uncanny X-Men kid, and you know I think it was X-Men number 133 that I picked up at a 7-Eleven that changed my life. Like I was like, oh my god, I didn't know you could do comics like this. Like that's the first time I realized there was an ongoing story in something. You know, and Wolverine was, you know, blew my mind as a teenager. You know, just like, oh my god, like I, you know, there's a character running around with blades coming out of his hands. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that, you know, a long shot, especially since they've got so many books now, but like, you know, I that Uncanny X-Men stuff back in the day when Chris Claremont and John Byrne and, you know, those guys were doing it was just, it blew my mind. And so like, I've always dreamed of like, man, could I ever recreate something like that? So yeah, that's the one book, that's my dream book always.
Was that like your inspiration? Like you were talking about all the, you know, you would draw with your buddy at school when you were coming up with your team. Was that kind of like what made you think the team thing?
Oh yeah. He was a huge Teen Titans guy at the time. That was his whole Joe Perez run.
Nice.
I was the Uncanny X-Men guy. So we kind of like morphed those together because, you know, we'd argue all the time about which team was better, you know?
Yeah.
And so like we kind of morphed it and made our own characters kind of based on the characters we liked in those two books.
Nice.
And, definitely. I mean, I was a teen guy for the longest time, which I'm having fun since Vinyl is basically, you know, the Avengers of serial killers. I'm having fun writing a teen book that's odd. You know,
I can't wait for like the fourth part where it's all three of the characters that are gonna be. It's like the Materials, you know.
Yes.
Elements. Yes. Like, or chemistry. There you go. Chemistry. Cause that would be a good one. I think that would be cool. I think it would be cool to see a X-Men of serial killers. Like that just, you know, sounds awesome to me, especially since like, if you've watched like the seasons of Dexter, where it's like him and like another serial killer working together, like how crazy that can really be. Now I'm just imagining your characters and going, yep, that's going to be awesome. I would read that. I would read that all day long.
Yeah,
because you know it's you got the fun part about it is they're not gonna be like, hey, let's run this play.
Yeah,
they're like, go do what you do.
Yeah,
yeah.
We can't work together. There's no way.
But right.
We're on the same team. Go do what you do.
I'll take. Yeah, this there's guy. No like. You go that way.
Alpha formation. You kill him.
Yeah, it's not going to work like that. Yeah.
We're going to run 21Z. Let's go. Yeah. So, all right. So we'll try to do a spoiler-free version of Falcon Winter Soldier for a few minutes, and then we'll talk a little bit about Invincible Episode 4, and then we'll be good. So I personally am just absolutely loving Falcon Winter Soldier. It, to me, if you liked the Winter Soldier movie, this is the movie for you. And this episode really cleaned up a lot of the problems I had with Civil War, where I thought the plot of Civil War was pretty dumb. It was awesome action movie, but it was kind of dumb. It really is just like, it's really bringing Zemo to a spot where his character really has depth. It's good to see
Sharon too.
Yeah. It's good to see Sharon Carter back. It's cool to see Madripoor, like what it actually looks like in the MCU. That was really awesome. And like, we're getting more of the Winter Soldier Bucky that we had in those issues before he took over the Cap shield. And I'm really just loving everything about it. Like, it has a hard Brubaker feel, and that's what I like so much. And now I'm like there's like a scene in it and I'm like, oh my God, is everybody going to get on the Thunderbolts train now? Like,
That seems to be the thing, but I'm on a different train and it's called Baron Zemo in a dance club dancing. I think a lot of people are on that train because Marvel put out a 1 hour loop of,
So I
post it in the link or in the comments below for people, but it's Baron Zemo dancing. I mean, this uptight guy that hates superheroes, and he's just kind of like, and it's just so weird. I would have loved to have been in that pitch, like, okay, you know, we got to set this up. You know, Zemo, he's going to team with them, but he's kind of using them because he has his agenda, but let's stop here and have him in a dance club just dancing. Like, who came up with that idea and why are they brilliant?
Love it.
So,
Love it. Yeah.
It's got to be somebody in charge too, right? Like, it's got to be an upper echelon guy that's like, hey, I want Zemo in a dance club, because the regular writers are like, how are we going to put this in? What?
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if it was kind of like, man, with that jacket, he just looks real big pimping, you know? And just like, because without the mask on, he's got like a purple suit underneath it.
Yeah.
It's kind of pimping. And I thought it was great. Everything about this show just makes me love the Young Avengers tie-in stuff. It really works for me. And it's got the action that I wanted too. So
I love the way that they're kind of like, if you're one of the people that still doesn't read Marvel comics, but you just like the MCU, and I think there's a lot of people out there, you don't know the Young Avengers. So I like the way they're laying this groundwork for the Young Avengers. I think it's going to be amazing. I can't wait. It's one of my favorite stories probably ever, just that 12 issue arc that they did for Young Avengers. So I'm loving that part of it for sure. So
also the thing I really am picking up on here that I really love about it, and I was glad that it ended up being like this, is it really has like a Lethal Weapon, like Riggs and Murtaugh vibe. Like, there's like a scene, I can't remember if it was this episode or the one before, where like, it was the one before, after the fight on top of the semis, and they're just like walking down this dirt road, and I'm just like, that's totally like a Lethal Weapon moment right there, like the buddy cop kind of deal, and I love it. I love it, love it, love it.
I was thinking Harry and Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber, but
had it been a puppy van that pulled up and picked them up instead of a Jeep, it'd been totally
yeah.
I would have totally agreed. if it were U.S. Agent and Black Star, or not Black Star, Battlestar, that's what his name is. Like, if it was those guys walking down there, I totally would agree with you.
Well, that's the movie I've seen the most in my life, so I usually find a way to connect Dumb and Dumber.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Do they have a briefcase with them and they're looking for Samsonite?
Yes.
All right. So definitely check out a new episode of that tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
And so Invincible. This... So you've now caught up, Tim. Because last week we talked about the first three episodes, but Tim had only seen the first one. Doug, have you seen any of these yet?
I've read it all. So
okay.
Yeah.
Holy crap, is it so good? Like the the episode one ends with like the scene where like he just annihilates the Guardians, and like it is so graphically perfect that I get goosebumps thinking about it. It's so good. I can't stop talking about how much I love the animation in this, because it's got that anime vibe, but still is very good to the actual art. Like, it doesn't take away from the art. That's
the style feels very similar to the comic. They don't change it up too much, but it still feels different, I guess. I don't know if that's how to say it, but I'm a fan of traditional animation too, so seeing that, I really enjoy that. So
that too, the fact that it's not all computer. I really like the subtle throw, like I really forgot that they were in there because I hadn't read Invincible in so long, but like the subtle things about like the detective demon who's basically Hellboy, and
in a leotard, really weird. He's his leotard on, and then he's like, well, I better put a trench coat over this because that looks weird. So,
you know, he's going swimming after this, it's fine, he's just going swimming. But I thought that was very cool. And for me, I also it took me four episodes, but I realized who the voice of the mom was, and it's Sandra Oh, and I'm a big Grey's person, and I'm like, oh my God, it's Christina. Oh my God, this is awesome. So, and then I'm like, and J.K. Simmons, who voices Omni-Man, is a fraternity brother of mine. So I'm like, yes, like this is awesome. Like, and as you said last week, Tim, like, dude, who else would have the perfect mustache to do that same?
Yeah.
You know,
nobody. Nobody. J.K. Simmons.
I mean, he looks like Jonah Jameson right there. Like, you know, if J. Jonah Jameson was jacked up and like a Superman, he would look like Omni-Man. So why not?
Yeah.
But I always liked how Invincible had that that little bit of a Spider-Man vibe, but not, and like also a little bit of like a Superman coming into play type thing. I always thought they balanced it. He balanced that well in the writing, and I think they still do that on the episodes. So
I want to talk about one scene that I was really confused on. So the blue guy who clones and makes different brothers, what's his name? I don't think he was in it. Yeah, I can't remember. So he's in that jail, that Supermax, and they're coming around with food and giving everybody food. And they have these chicken pot pies that look amazing. And I'm just like, if you kill someone, you get to go live. He's in this really nice, comfortable room, just reading a novel, chilling. He doesn't have anybody bothering him. And then he's like, hey, sorry to bother you, murderer, but here's a really great pie. Like, sign me up. I want to be in one of your books. I want to kill someone. And then I want to be in that prison. And I want those pies. That's what I want. I just didn't understand this prison that was kind of like giving everybody like everything anybody would want in life. So just was really weird to me.
Yeah, that was kind of like the only weird part of the plot that I thought was like, why would you want to leave there? But him leaving and like using the clone body as a
shield. Oh God, that was amazing.
Oh my God, that was cool.
I think that's one of the things I like is like, I don't expect this stuff because I didn't read it. So he grabs him and it's just like, oh, you know, they were having that spat before of who was the original one and who was the better one. And it's just like, I can always make another brother.
I thought it was funny when they were making him, he like happened to find all this stuff in a single warehouse.
Yeah.
Happened to have it all. And then he's just like, hamburger. And then it just gets pureed. And I'm like, convenience.
Yeah, there's a lot of those convenient things in there, but I kind of just, I tend to ignore it because it's like, it's a cartoon, you know? So as much adult stuff as they want to put in, it's still a cartoon. And
so, well, even in the series, like Kirkman was always throwing out some of the funny jabs of, you know, making fun of some of the way we handle comics and going, well, Spider-Man has his secret lair and it's in a storage facility. Like, I don't know if that makes sense. And he's like, you know what, I'm just going to throw this in here too. You know, like, let's have fun with that. But in defense of the prison system in there, if you were running that prison with the world's most deadly supervillains in it, wouldn't you want them to be kind of like on your side?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, and I mean, I don't know, like the, I guess, because we did see that guy get effed up. He reached through, grabbed him and bashed his face off. And then
ripped his arm off.
He ripped his arm off and he's like flopping it around, like trying to like smack it on. Yeah, it was hilarious. So yeah, I guess that's a good point. So, what else? I'm trying to think what else was. Oh, there was the really big fight when they were bringing in the new Guardians. They were doing like kind of like the trials to see who would make the cut.
Yeah.
And it was the little girl.
The monster girl.
Yeah. And she just messed Rex up, and I loved it because, first of all, I can't remember the guy's name that's playing, that does the voice, but he's perfect.
The guy voicing Rex? Oh my god, yeah. He is perfect. Oh my god. I'll look it up while you finish.
Doug, remember the in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the crazy guy with the big curly hair?
Is that Pimento?
Yeah. That's who's voicing Rex.
That's really good. Yeah, that's brilliant.
So he plays the dickhead like perfectly. Mm-hmm. And then getting to see this little girl just beat the crap out of him, especially because it was just after a few scenes when he had cheated on his girlfriend with the multiple girl. So that was a really awesome scene, just getting to see him get his butt beat by this little girl, monster girl.
Yeah, Jason Mantzoukas. His name. Yeah. Yeah. Holy crap. Zachary Quinto is Robot? That's awesome. Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
The cast in this show is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. It's insane.
Awesome. Yeah.
You know, he's from Pittsburgh, right?
Yep.
Yep. His grandmother still lives over in Bridgeville.
Ryan Otley's from Salt Lake City.
Oh,
so
there you go.
There's one degree of separation on it.
There we go. That's how we link our two cities. Boom.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. All right. I have a very secret thing that Tim doesn't even know about. That I'm going to talk about real quick. So we are partnering with, and I want to see if it's so. Have you ever heard of Talent Talk Live?
No.
So Talent Talk Live is currently, it's a lot of guys that I think worked with the Heroes Initiative that are helping guys do basically virtual panels. You pay for them. They're kind of master classy meets Q&As. And next week, we are going to give away one pass to the Christopher Priest one in May.
Oh, wow.
For free. To someone listening, while we do it,
I'm not going to be able to do the show next week, so I'll just listen. Am I eligible?
Maybe.
Employees paid or not eligible.
It is normally a $30 ticket for this event, and it's going to be people who interact in the chat live on YouTube, and we're going to give it away. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So, Doug, next week, if you're not doing anything, if you're like in the chat, I'm going to be like, come on, man. But it'll be a lot of fun. We partner with them. We're going to have another podcast in the Pittsburgh area called Comic Book Pit. They're going to be giving one away as well next week during their show. So it's a good time. These guys are great. And we want to support all kinds of creators. We're going to have some links that we'll pass out to buy the tickets, but there's also like some Howard Chaykin ones, some Mark Waid. There's a Mark Waid and Howard Chaykin and Greg Pak and Dave Soboldov. I totally probably wrecked that last name.
I don't think you're the first.
And Matt Wagner in 2 days.
Yeah.
the other Wagner.
Yeah.
So make sure you guys check that out. It'll be cool. I'm excited to give somebody a really awesome experience of being in a live panel with Christopher Priest talking about comics.
And you said the money for that goes to the Hero Initiative kind of thing, or
I think it just goes to those guys. But a lot of the guys that created this and run this event are linked with Heroes Initiative.
Nice.
And they're great guys. We support the Heroes Initiative in the stores. We support the Heroes Initiative at the convention. We do cosplay karaoke's the weeks of, like, a couple times leading up to our Three Rivers Comic Con, and all the proceeds from that go to Heroes Initiative. We've raised a couple hundred bucks doing that every time, which, by the way, those are hilarious. Definitely check it out. Make sure you guys are tuning in next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. Tim and I are mostly, I think we're going to make a structure for it. It might be a thing where it's going to be, you know, pick John and Tim's brains, and whoever can ask good questions, whoever asks the best question is going to win that. I think
that's how we're gonna get some interaction from everybody. Favorite Dumb and Dumber quote. That's what I want.
So it's going to be pick our brains with your questions in the comments. We're still going to do some reviews of comics. So if you come in, you'll have time to post your question while we review comics. And then we're going to do that. It's going to be a lot of fun. So other than that, Doug, thanks so much for hanging out with us, man. It was good seeing you again.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you too. I'm glad I got to meet you. So.
Oh, this was a blast, guys. I really appreciate you having me on. I had a great time.
Awesome.
Yeah. Don't forget, vinyl's going to be out in June. So get on it, guys.
Pre-order it now.
See us in the store or do it on Comic Hub. So.
Yep. Super easy. Make your life easy. Just learn how to use the hub. It's great.
Yep.
Make our life easy too. It's great. So, all right. Thanks a lot, guys. And we'll see you next week.
Peace.